Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Lakers and Dion Waiters have agreed to a deal for the rest of the season, which means exactly what it sounds. Dion Waiters is going to be an LA Laker. You know, the guy with some of the best nicknames in the league. Nicknames like Headache, Google Me, is now a member of the Lake Show. Now, you can say what you want about the season that Giannis has had, or the ridiculous year that LeBron has had, or what Luka is doing right now. But nobody has had a more amazing year than Dion Waiters. A year, a season that included not one, not two, but three different suspensions in Miami. The first one, a single game for allegedly complaining while on the bench during a preseason game and reportedly refusing to participate in a mandatory weigh-in. That right there is one of my favorite suspensions ever. The second suspension, of course, was the legendary 10-gamer for the airplane incident, which I will get back to in a second. But I don't want that to overshadow an awesome third suspension, which reportedly was for telling the team that he was sick and then posting pics of himself on a boat. That's an all-time move. Do not sleep on that move. Like, if the plane incident had not happened, we would still be talking about the boat incident. Just because the plane was so legendary does not mean we should overlook or sleep on the boat. And then there was that plane incident, right? The incident in November that was summarized by Brian Windhorst and Woj as, quote, Miami Heat guard Dion Waiters experienced a, quote, panic attack on the team's charter flight Thursday night after consuming a THC-infused edible, end quote. Oh, and there was that detail that first responders met the plane when it landed, and the allegation that Waiters was passed out when the plane landed and allegedly had a seizure when somebody attempted to wake him up, which is completely insane. One thing to have a panic attack after slamming an edible. Quite another to have a panic attack after slamming an edible and forcing the plane to make a premature landing. They had to divert course and land because of this guy. That's next level. He redirected a team flight because he didn't know what the hell he was eating. A professional athlete didn't know what he was eating, didn't know what the hell he was putting in his body. Not exactly body is temple, is it? It really is insane. Almost as insane as having three suspensions, totaling 17 games, $1.4 million in lost salary, and $1.2 million in a lost bonus. This guy's played in a total of three games, so he's had as many games as suspensions. He's been traded to Memphis, he's been waived, and now he's signing with the number one seed in the West. All that crap, and he's signing with the number one seed in the West. Like, that guy could do all of that and still has this amazing opportunity. A great look at a ring. Never mind falling forward. You cannot tell me that that is not the greatest single season in NBA history. Yeah, great. Wilt had 100 in one night. Sure. Waiters has as many suspensions served as games played, and LeBron still wants him on his team. Yeah, great. Russ and the Big O, they averaged a triple-double per game for an entire season. Yeah, good, great, awesome, cool. But did the Big O ever mess up a team flight because of edibles? Because Dion Waiters did. And again, despite all that, he just signed with the number one seed in the West and arguably the team to beat. But you go ahead and put some respect on that. Because there's not another player in the league who can pull that off. I'm not sure there's another player who's ever been in the league that could pull that off. So the question, is this guy really worth the trouble? Do the risks really outweigh the rewards? And exactly what are the Lakers getting in Waiters? Who the hell knows, right? That's your simplest answer, and that's the truth. People get all worked up about teams adding guys off waivers, acting like it's either the best thing ever or the worst thing ever, when of course it's never either of those things. You want to say to me the Lakers just clinched a title because they added Dion Waiters? You're wrong. You want to say to me the Lakers are desperate for adding Dion Waiters off waivers? You're wrong about that too.
Oh no,
they know what they're getting, and it's not the guy who was the fourth overall pick in the NBA draft. Not the guy who was an NBA starter who averaged 16 a night. If they were getting that guy, that would be great. But But if he were still that guy, he wouldn't have been available in the first place. If he were still that guy, he would not have been suspended three times already, traded, and then waived. But it doesn't mean that he's worthless. Potentially, he has value. He can help them. And yes, they need him. They worked him out last week, or this week, and they clearly saw enough from him that made them say that he was worth signing to a minimum deal for the rest of the year. Listen, this guy, once you get beyond all this noise, this guy could give them some scoring punch off the bench. He can create off the dribble. That's been an issue. He could give them somebody to spark that offense when LeBron sits, which is an enormous issue. Because when LeBron goes to the bench, they're a totally different team. And by a totally different team, I mean like a bad team, at least offensively. They're ranked 29th in offensive efficiency when LeBron's on the bench. So when LeBron comes off the floor, the ball stops moving and it stops going in the hole, and Waiters potentially can help that. And then maybe he could be the guard equivalent of Dwight Howard, a guy with a ton of talent who the rest of the league had given up on and who has turned out to be an absolute difference maker this season. Now, that is the longest of long shots, not because Waiters can't do it, but because Dwight is doing it. And it's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And for the Lakers to have that happen twice would be like winning the lottery twice. And again, because, have I made this point, Deion Waiters has played three games this year and served three suspensions. So, let's not act like bringing in a guy who's been on three teams and has played three games is going to be a guy that's going to win the Lakers game seven of the championship. But, do not clown the Lakers for signing him to do that, because they're not. They didn't. They know what he is. They know what he could possibly bring to them. Maybe he contributes. Maybe he doesn't. Just don't act like they were out there looking for a third to be a part of that big three with LeBron and AD. AD, what's good, baby? What's good, baby? First off, they already have that third part of that three-headed monster. They have him. And his name is Alex Caruso. But this much is true. Deion Waiters, going from being suspended three times and traded and waived to possibly playing in the NBA Finals, is the stuff of legend. And if he caps it off, the greatest season ever in NBA history by winning a title, he better lead that parade right down Figueroa. Biggest bone ever. D, don't jack it up. Imagine, that'd be like LeGarrette Blount getting booted from Pittsburgh and winning a Super Bowl with New England later that season. So, watch what you eat, wafers. Waiters. Might be your last shot. I did it for you, clones.
Strong greatness out here, cuz.
We are joined right now by Andrew Thomas. Andrew, good to have you on. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man, good. So, it's been a few days, and you're already back to training, but I want to know, what was the experience like of being at the NFL Combine?
It was a dream come true. I've been, you know, watching it on TV since I was young, but it was a great experience. A lot of interviews, a lot of psych testing, and, you know, just being around some of the top guys, you know, in the country is pretty cool.
Yeah, I would imagine that. I was going to say, I bet that's pretty cool. You know, the old cliche is it is the world's biggest job interview. So I'm curious, what was your mindset going into the Combine? Were you pretty calm or were you pretty fired up?
I was pretty calm. I just knew that all I had to do was, you know, show who I truly am, and I felt like I did that.
Now, from talking with draft prospects over the years, they always talk about how busy and hectic the Combine is and how long those days are. What was it like for you, and were you prepared for that?
I feel like I was prepared from training at Exos, but, like, it was, you know, very busy days. We'll have, you know, interviews all day long. We'll have medicals and then the workout on the Wednesday. Very busy, but, you know, like I said, I enjoyed the process.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Of course you are. This time, don't make a shake, don't eat a bar, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper instead. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. It goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach, anywhere at all. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? We're talking to Andrew Thomas. All right, so Andrew, let me ask you this. From you played your high school ball at Pace Academy, where you were also part of the drum line. So how'd you go about balancing that? Were you drumming before a game and then jumping right into play football? How did that work?
No, so on Saturdays, on Fridays, it was strictly football. The only times I would go back and forth were like on pep rally days. I have my jersey on. I'll be in the drum line playing, you know, with the band, and then go over with the football team and, you know, get hyped like, you know, normal pep rally.
Now, the thing is, this was not just kind of like some side hustle. I mean, you're pretty serious about this. Your whole family played music growing up. So what was your life like in that household when you were a kid?
Music all around. Growing up in church, being in the choir, things like that. Music was a big part of our family. We always singing, listening to music. My dad has drums at the house, so I'm always, you know, playing the drums, or, you know, my sister playing the flute. I guess we're always involved in music.
Talking to Andrew Thomas. So the story goes that Chris Slade, who was an All-American at Virginia and had a nice career in the NFL, was your coach at Pace Academy. At one point, he told you, listen, you can be a great football player, but you're going to have to make a decision between music and football. Is that how that actually went? And if so, what do you remember about that conversation?
Yeah, it was at the end of my my freshman year going to my sophomore year. And he just told me that, you know, I had to put more, you know, emphasis in football because he used to say I have a chance, you know, to write my own ticket. And it doesn't mean that, you know, I stopped doing band because I was still in band, but I just put, you know, a lot more emphasis into football, working hard in the off season. I also had a growth spurt after my freshman season, so that helped, you know, going and starting to get recruited and things like that.
We're talking to Andrew Thomas. You know, I love talking to offensive linemen. I feel like I don't do it enough, and I like doing it because it's such a technical position, and obviously there's a certain intellect that comes along with this to play that position well. When you're playing offensive tackle and you're dominating the man across from you, either in pass protection or in run blocking, like, what does that feel like? How would you describe that to somebody who's never had the chance to do it?
That's the best feeling in the world, to move somebody against his will. Especially playing at Georgia, people knew, you know, we were going to run the ball right at them. They knew, you know, what type of scheme we ran. It wasn't too crazy. They knew we were running, you know, a lot of inside zone, and just being able to move a man against his will, you know, seeing your running back, you know, score is the best feeling ever.
So when you were at the Combine, what did you want teams to know about the kind of person and the kind of player they would be getting if they drafted you?
Just a person that has, you know, great character, a great family, great background. So off the field issues, you know, won't be a problem. On the field, I just want to show, you know, my technique, my athleticism, how fluid I am, and my movements. And then the interviews, the biggest thing for me was just showing how much I know about the game of football and how I'm looking, you know, to take tools from whoever, you know, drafts me to be the best I can.
We're talking to Andrew Thomas. What about the interviews? You know, every year you hear about teams asking prospects kind of off-the-wall things or weird questions.
Yeah.
Did anybody ask you anything like what kind of an animal would you be or anything unusual like that?
No, I didn't have anything crazy like that. But in one interview, they asked me to sing because in my bio it said I grew up in the church choir.
So did you?
I did.
What did you sing? Something from church?
It's a gospel song. It's called How Great Is Our God.
How did that go?
It went pretty well. They were smiling, so I guess I did well.
You know it. So what's the process like for you now between now and the pro day?
Yep. So right now, just trying to you know, make sure keeping my weight steady and then making sure I'm doing a little bit more conditioning, getting ready for, you know, actually being on the field. It's a little different than, you know, like combine training. And then offensive line-wise, just working on the small details in my set, making sure my feet are at the right angles, and then my punch, making sure my hands don't get, you know, too far outside my frame.
So it sounds to me like you're very much in the process. You're staying true to your technique. You're looking to finish. I understand all these things, but have you allowed yourself to think about what it's going to feel like to have your name called and to know that you are officially going to play in the NFL? Any idea what kind of emotions you and your family are going to be feeling when that happens?
This is going to be pure joy. Been working for this for a long time. I have a lot of favor on my life. I'm blessed to be in this, you know, position. So it's just, you know, opportunity to thank God and my whole family, you know, time to, you know, spend time together and celebrate.
UFC 248 is going down tomorrow night in Vegas. If you were not thinking about watching it, you might want to consider this. You might want to reconsider your plans, not because it's a UFC fight card, not because it's a good fight card, but because it's an Israel Adesanya fight. And that makes it an event. Adesanya, when he fights, they're events. If you're not familiar with The Last Stylebender, now would be a pretty good time to familiarize yourself with him, because this guy's got all the makings of a superstar. He's electric, both inside and outside the cage. Check out his appearance on this show last April when he talked about smelling fear on his opponent. What's that like for you as a fighter when you know your opponent is scared?
It's like a great white in the ocean smelling a trickle of blood a mile away. And then as you swim closer to it, that's like a fight day getting closer. And by fight night, you can just see him bleeding. And it's like, ooh, it's time to eat.
You can see him bleeding and it's time to eat. And that great white is getting better every single time he steps in the cage. He made his debut at UFC 221 in February of 2018. He told me that that guy who fought then would not stand a chance against the guy who was fighting 1 year later.
The Israel that came into the UFC 221 back in February last year, I f***ed him up. Yeah, he doesn't know as much as MMA as me right now.
He said that on this show. Talk about being comfortable. I'd bleep him up. He would bleep him up. The older Israel would bleep up the younger one. And my version, or my guess is, the 2020 version of Israel would bleep up the 2019 version of Israel. Because since we last talked, he won the interim belt, he won the official belt, and then he ran his record to a perfect 18-0. And he's got confidence for days, like his consistent and persistent calling out of John Jones and calling him, quote, a washed up old man. Or the fact that he's going to face Yoel Romero tomorrow night. Now, for years, Dana White's been saying that nobody wants to fight Romero. It doesn't matter what his record is. Nobody wants to fight Romero. Dana said, quote, I never get anybody calling me and saying, hey, Dana, I want to fight Yoel Romero. When do you ever hear a guy call it doesn't happen? Guys wind up fighting him because the rankings dictate it or whatever. But no one is volunteering for that. Adesanya kept blowing up my phone. I want Romero. I want Romero. I want Romero. I respect that. You want to fight a guy like that, I respect it. And so we made it happen. End quote. Adesanya wants you to know exactly why he does want to fight Romero. Quote, I'm a different guy. I'm a guy who seeks out the challenges. Yoel is coming off a 3-fight losing streak. That's not good for business. The UFC, they didn't want to put it on, but Dana is very impressionable, and I can convince him when I make sense. If it makes dollars, it makes sense. So I talked to him, and I said I want to fight him for so-and-so reasons. End quote. But you got to love the way he talks about Dana White. I love that he's breaking it down and telling Dana how Dana should run the business, because Dana needs help running that business. Dana needs help running a business that he took from a $2 million business and turned it into a $4 billion business. But Adesanya is saying Dana is very impressionable. Like, he just told Dana what's going to happen, and Dana said, you know what? Great idea, Israel. Like, Israel's not even a fighter. He's a partner. So why did the partner in the business want to take on Romero? He said, quote, pretty much, he's a guy no one wants to fight. So that makes me want to fight him even more. I want to know, why is everyone so scared of this human? He's human. At the end of the day, he's just another guy who bleeds if you cut him. He sweats, he gasses out. I don't gas out, end quote. I think part of the reason why people are scared of Romero is his crazy physique. Again, not Adesanya. Quote, people are fooled by this Hollywood facade of muscles. It's been ingrained in us since we were kids. From Schwarzenegger. From Rambo. He must be tough. End of quote. Dana also adjusted the rules a little bit for Adesanya's walkout. Remember, when he fought in October, he had to convince Dana to let him to do something different. And that was about as different as you can get. Remember that? A choreographed routine with backup dancers. He walked out to that. A choreographed routine with backup dancers. Quote, he told me he doesn't like that stuff. That's why they turned it down for Melbourne. But I was like, nah, it's my show. Dana is Dana. Andy's one person. The world is filled with many people, billions of people. I feel like through just being yourself authentically, you can really tap into something that everyone can relate to. It's not really just about walkouts or anything. It's the way I speak, my demeanor, the way I dress, end quote. So when boxing has a guy talking about how his ring walk might have ruined his actual fight, Adesanya is keeping the main thing the main thing. Quote, I won't do anything crazy, but I'll make it visually pleasing. End quote. So if you're curious where this came from, the love of the walkout, where did he get that idea from? Simple. Remember Prince Nassim Hamed. How many other fighters do you know who are name-checking Prince Nassim Hamed? Quote, I remember being mesmerized at how he came into the ring, his flip, and then just the way he just played with fighters. That was one of my earliest memories of showmanship, of boxing, of fighting. Watching Prince just bleep with people. He just owned it. He owned it. That's what I'm doing as well. I'm owning it. End quote. He is doing that, and he's on the verge of owning the entire sport. The guy who talks about great whites, bleeping himself up, being inspired by Prince Nassim Hamed, and putting on a show before he even gets to the cage, could be on the verge of being a full-blown superstar. And he's taking on Romero. Now, anything can happen in a UFC fight, and usually does. He could lose, or he could become that much bigger. The bandwagon is gassing up. Get on now before it's too late. I love the guy. Absolutely love the guy. I think he's a superstar. He is Therese Paylor. Therese, good to have you back. What's up? How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you doing? Thanks good. For having me in the jungle again.
Man. Good to have you back, man. Really good to have you back. All right, so right now you've got a piece up on Patrick Mahomes. Let me first ask you this. What is your sense as to how he's enjoying life as a Super Bowl champion?
Mahomes is definitely living it up right now. He's so competitive, and I thought one thing that was really interesting, and I knew this, but I thought it was interesting that he said it, was that he mentioned that he hadn't done a whole lot of winning before he got to the NFL. Remember at Texas Tech, like one of the things people used against him in his draft eval was that he only won like 5 games his last year there. And he said he'd never won a state championship in high school. He never won, obviously, on a major level in college. So for him to now be the Super Bowl MVP, the MVP of the league, and to have led Kansas City kind of out of the football wilderness, you know, he's really, really enjoying it. And you could really get a sense of that during the parade. You know, Mahomes is pretty buttoned up, man. He's a really mature kid for 24 years old. But he was having a good time in the parade. He was really feeding to the energy that he was getting from the fans. So I think he's still working hard. You know, he's already gotten back to training. But Mahomes is definitely enjoying the moment. I still don't think he's satisfied yet either.
I think there's so much that's really interesting in that response. Number one, the fact that he's not a guy who's won a lot of games. I mean, you look at this guy, right? Therese, he looks like a natural-born winner. Like, all this guy's ever done is won. This guy wakes up in the morning, he rolls out of the rack, he wins. But the fact of the matter is, he really didn't. So I think that's interesting. And you're right, he's really buttoned up, but he was having a really good time. Like, he's in the moment. He understands. So how do you think he's going to approach his contractual situation with Kansas City?
I know that winning really matters to him, and so does his legacy. Like, Patrick Mahomes cares about his legacy. He wants to get the most out of his football career as possible. And I think, in that respect, he respects a lot of the things Tom Brady has done. So I don't think it's a coincidence that both one of his co-agents, Lee Steinberg, and Mahomes have kind of mentioned the fact that, you know, quarterbacks are judged by Super Bowls and Super Bowl wins. And I think if that's something that really, really matters to you, there's a way to make sure that you can get yours, and he will get his. His next contract will absolutely be the most ever paid to a player. But there's a way to get yours without just destroying the team. And if you don't have that mindset, if you look at Mahomes' resume, he could really stick it to him. You know, he could really go in and like ask for the world, and they'd have to give it to him because he's Patrick Mahomes. But just based on the things I heard from him personally and what his agent has said, it doesn't sound like they're going to do that, even though the contract would be very lucrative very respectable and something that the agents can still use to recruit other players and can't be used against them.
Therese Paylor joining us, senior NFL writer for Yahoo. He's a Hall of Fame voter as well, co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. You mentioned Tom Brady. I kind of went back and forth on this. I hate to bring it up, but when you hear the names of all the teams who are reportedly linked to Tom Brady, how many of them are actually good fits outside of New England?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jim. And I'm going to be honest. I've kind of got an issue a little bit with the Tom Brady to all these other places talk, just in the sense that, not saying it can't happen, because if the Patriots don't pursue him hard enough, it could always happen. But I just don't think there's a lot of great fits for him. Let's just knock out three of them, right? People are talking about San Francisco. Okay, well, two of Jimmy Garoppolo's teammates have already come out and kind of spoke for him, and Jeff Wilson and George Kittle. And also, Kyle Shanahan's offense last year, which is one of the most beautiful offenses in football, one of the most well-schemed offenses in football, was based on bootlegs and movement stuff, Jim. So, like, right. That's not kind of what you want, like, a 42-year-old quarterback to do in general. So I have an issue with the football fit there. Tennessee, looks like they're about to lose Big Jack Conklin, the 25-year-old right tackle. Well, if you're Tom Brady, the reason you'd want to go to Tennessee is to play behind him and Taylor Lewan, and one of the best offensive lines in football. And because the skill players are good. Obviously, Derrick Henry's a stud, and A.J. Brown's really good. But, you know, you lose the right tackle, all of a sudden, that's a little less interesting to me, right? And then Vegas, listen, I'm all in on Tom Brady playing for Vegas, playing for John Gruden. I think that'd be great for the NFL. I think that'd be great for that market. I think it'd be a lot of fun. But one thing you have to remember is that the Raiders run John Gruden's offense, okay? Now, of course, you're like, of course, yeah, he runs it. But while some coaches kind of adjust what they do to their quarterback, John has a reputation of, like, you're going to run what John's running, okay? So I'm not saying that John wouldn't adjust what he does to what Brady wants because, hey, maybe John really is tired of getting his teeth kicked in by his good friend Andy Reid. You know, maybe he is. But if you bring Tom Brady into the mix, you're going to be running Tom's offense. And I think it'd be interesting to see what that marriage could potentially look like. So while, look, he may not go back to New England, I think from a football fit, there's no doubt the Patriots, with more offensive weapons, added tight ends, or some fast receivers, that's the best fit. And it'd be a lot easier for him to go somewhere else, Jim, if Josh McDaniels had been hired somewhere. But with him still going back to New England, New England is the best fit for now.
They're the best fit, and it makes too much sense. But then when you look at it, Therese Paylor, my guest, when you look at what's going on here, like over the years, Bill Belichick has made it very clear in the past, he's got a number and a value for each guy. He's not going to give special treatment to anybody at all. How much of that is in play when it comes to Brady? Like, would he give Brady special treatment, or is Belichick just not wired that way?
I don't think he's wired that way. You know, Belichick is the go-to now. So, you know, he treats all these guys the same. It's part of the reason he's been able to keep everybody in line for two decades. You know, like, this is going to be about the team. And that means an unfailing devotion to pragmatism, okay? That's it. So, yeah, I'm sure there's probably a part of Belichick to see some of the fun things his opponents are running. The Baltimore Ravens, that run-based offense, basically bringing the wing tee back, seeing Andy Reid devote an offense, build an offense around RPOs and shotgun and just be like, oh, man, this is where the league is going. I'm sure he's thinking that, but at the end of the day, you know, Brady is still their best option at the moment, even though I am sure that it's impossible to love the game of football and be a football historian like Belichick and not see where offense is going and think that he's going to – and not think that that's something that they're going to want to install at some point.
You know, you got to love the fact that I start this whole thing off by saying, I hate to even do this, but, and yet this is all I'm doing. But I got to ask one more thing about Brady. All the drama surrounding Brady and the possibility of all these other teams really having a shot at him, does this all come down to the fact that Brady feels like Belichick does not respect him and does not treat him the way he would like to be treated? How much of this is about that?
It feels like that's got something to do with it. I think at any point, you know, Jim, you're obviously somebody that's accomplished a lot in your career. Like, at some point, anybody who has, like, you kind of want to feel respected and appreciated for your contributions to whatever company you work for. Like, that matters to you, man. Like, you want to know that your devotion to the craft is respected and appreciated. That makes you feel good. And if Brady isn't getting that, and I'm not there, so I'm not sure, but you've heard enough rumblings about it to make you wonder if that's a real thing. If Brady's not getting that, it's kind of hard to be mad at him for it. It's just, you know, Bill Belichick's going to run his football team the way he wants to. And I will tell you this, you know, if he's going to be this way with Brady, there's not any other player he has dealt with or will deal with in the future that could expect anything different, which would, in a funny way, be what's best for that organization, even if it's not best for Brady right now.
Therese Paylor, my guest. Before I let you go, I've got LSU's Patrick Queen coming on the show in the third hour. Now, you've got a really interesting piece up right now on the linebackers in the draft and how teams are looking to deal with quarterbacks like Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson, while at the same time having to defend skilled players in space. So how valuable are guys like Queen and Isaiah Simmons in the new NFL?
Yeah, Patrick Queen is a great pull for you, man. That kid is an unbelievable football player. Off-ball linebackers have never been the importance of them has really grown over the last, I'd say, 5 years or so. If your guys can run and they can cover and they can hit, it gives you a schematic advantage in a way. It really helps you match up against some of these super fast offenses in the NFL. Look at the Super Bowl. Yes. The Kansas City Chiefs put up 31 points. But for three quarters, hey, listen, the 49ers defense was giving them all they could handle. And guess what? All three of their linebackers can really go, right? Greenlaw, Warner, Alexander, those guys can run. So not only does that help you match up against the tight end, which is a really important part in today's offensive football, it allows you to match up in sub-package. Teams go three wide receivers. They're banking on you having to match up with that. And then if your linebackers can't defend the run with an even box, they can run the ball on you. But if your linebackers can run and you're in sub package and they can stop the run, then you've got an opportunity to really stop an offense and ground them and negate a lot of the matchup advantages they're trying to get. So guys like Patrick Queen, Isaiah Simmons, Ken Murray Jr., who I heard great things about, you know, these are the type of players that really good defenses absolutely need to have on that side of the ball to be able to match up with the high-powered offenses in today's NFL.
He's on it. Senior NFL writer for Yahoo. He is a Hall of Fame voter. He is a co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. Extremely well plugged in. Therese Paylor, my guest. My man, great job. Therese, great to have you back. I appreciate you. Thanks for doing that.
As always, anytime, Jim. Appreciate it. Thank you.
James Kelly, what's up, head?
Not much, Jim.
Oh. Am I on? Okay, there I am.
You're on,
okay.
Bro. You're on, all right. Just because you can't hear yourself does not mean that you're not on.
Thank you, Alan. I'm doing good, Jim.
Should we run that back? And now we bring in James Kelly. How you doing there, big head?
I'm doing wonderful. No, I can't turn my own mic on.
All right, there you go. You're fine. Anyway, bro. All right, so why don't we jump right into this? It is for entertainment purposes only. However, if they choose to be entertained and use actual money, so be it. Biggest game of the weekend, James, in the association is actually tonight here at Staples. Lakers and Bucks. The Lakers are 47-13, best in the West. The Bucks are 53-9, best in the league. LeBron and AD v. Giannis. Laker line -1. Who do you like?
It started at -2 for the Lakers. It went fast to -1, but Vegas is going big Lakers on percentage of bets and money. Me, I'm going to go the opposite way with this one because that's what I do. The Bucks right now are the best offense in all of basketball.
Jokes. Yep. My man's got jokes. Yeah,
they're the best offense in all of basketball. They're the best defense in all of basketball. The way they set this thing up tonight, I see them being able to push the Lakers outside of the paint, make them shoot from the outside. That's the one weakness the Lakers have in their game. If this was the finals or something like that, I would definitely run towards the Lakers in a 7-game series. But tonight, I just think this is a statement game for the Bucks. They need this to go into the playoffs. I just like the points, and they're the best record in the NBA.
I don't always agree with you, but you generally do make sense. You're making sense here. But what about the Lakers? The last time they played, the Lakers were kind of gassed out, and LeBron was dinged. I feel like it's the other way around right now. Milwaukee might be relatively healthy, but they are playing a lot. They're playing a lot of games in not that much time. Do you feel like they've got the gas and the juice to get it done?
I do think they did. They bounced back the other night against Indiana. They looked very, very good after losing to Miami. Remember that before that, they went like 83 straight games of scoring over 100 points, so they showed it last time out against Indiana. They look good. I do like them a lot, and they have Bledsoe, I believe, this time. They didn't have him last time. I'm looking for Chris Middleton to be big tonight. He has to be big. He has to be big in the playoffs for the Bucks to go far.
You have Milwaukee plus one.
Milwaukee plus one.
I'm taking Lakers minus one. I will actually go on record with this. I'm going to go Lakers minus one.
Like Vegas.
You decide. You decide who you like better, who you believe. I'm going Lakers minus one. He's got Milwaukee plus one. UFC 248. Now, I just did a whole rant on Adesanya. 18-0. I think the next big thing in mixed martial arts. This guy's got superstar written all over him. He's going up against Yoel Romero, who's 13-4. Adesanya, flight deck. Major favorite, minus 320. Romero is the underdog at plus 250. I know you. I know you're always on the hunt for value. You're not getting it with Israel at minus 320. Would you take a shot at Romero at plus 250?
So everything you said about Israel, I absolutely agree with. This guy is special inside, outside. He is the next big thing. He is comfortable in the octagon. He is like Anderson Silva of this generation. Having said that, yes, I will take Yoel Romero. Plus 250, there is one thing that nobody is talking about with Yoel, and I can't believe anybody's talking about it, and that's why I think Israel shouldn't have taken this fight. It's not because he's big, he's strong, he's tough. He is all those things. It's like running into that damn camera about 100 times on Saturday night.
What would you know about that? You haven't even done it once. I did.
I might be out if it happened to me. But the one thing
the
they're not talking about...
The camera would be out if you hit it with your head.
Is Yoel Romero, Jim. He is a wrestler. He might be the best wrestler ever to step forward into the octagon. He is an Olympic wrestler. In American wrestling, okay, I'll make this real fast. Dan Gable, John Smith, Kale Sanderson, the three greatest wrestlers ever to wrestle. There's an argument there.
Yoel Just drop Kale Sanderson's name.
Kale Sanderson, never lost in college, won an Olympic gold, great wrestler. Yoel Romero beat this guy twice. If Yoel Romero decides to take this to the mat, and this is why I think Israel is kind of somewhat crazy, and I respect the hell out of him if he could pull this thing off, Yoel could upset and he could win this fight. The problem is he never does it, and I don't know why.
All right, so it's interesting. I don't, not in any way looking to disrespect Yoel, but if he is the greatest wrestler ever, and he's beaten Kale Sanderson twice, and everybody's terrified to fight the guy, nobody wants the guy, how is it that this very guy has lost three of his last four fights?
Well, a couple of them are on some close calls, and I thought he probably could have won those things. But a lot of times, like Yoel and like these guys that come in, and DC sometimes does that. They fall in love with their striking, and they're not
And by the way, he's as old as Tom Brady.
Yeah, a little bit older. He's turning 43 next month. Okay. That's not going to help either. And he hasn't fought in almost a year. All those things are true, but he doesn't really get hurt, so sometimes he just mismanages a fight because he's just like, all right, I'm not worried here, so I'm just going to keep fighting, but... It looks worse than it really is. It's a better fight than a lot of people are thinking.
All right, so you see value at plus 250.
Plus 250.
Hard for me to hit that thing at minus 320, but if I'm looking at it straight up and I got to pick a winner, I'm going to go with my guy Adesanya. But if you're looking to get down, there is value at plus 250. All right, my favorite part of this segment, the XFL portion of this segment. Given how you're killing this part of the game, James, I should have started with this. How fat are you getting on the XFL? And have you missed on any of your picks yet in that league?
I have not missed on any of my picks. I am...
How do you explain that?
4-0. Well, I mean, you study. I put the prep in. I understand the rosters. The XFL's a thing right now, so I got to look at it.
You know that there is separation in the preparation, right?
That's it.
Okay. All right, so... In fact, why do you bet anything other than the XFL?
Well, it's only on Saturday and Sundays, and I got Monday through Friday to do something, so.
That's right.
All right, so last week it came right down to the wire, right? You had the Houston Roughnecks picking you up against the Dallas Renegades. In fact, at the end of that game, how good did that feel? Like, explain that the euphoria and the thrill of victory versus the agony of defeat, and especially in the XFL.
Landry Jones helped me out quite a bit there. I almost should have lost, but that defense doesn't bend, doesn't break, which I said, or the other way around. I said that last week on the air, and they picked me up, and they saved the day for me. P.J. Walker, good quarterback there. He's going to have an NFL type of shot, I would say.
Is James Kelly, with his gigantic head, talking over your head? Are you getting all this? Are you writing all this down? You're getting some really good intel. Now, that said, are you riding with the Roughnecks once again, or are you looking elsewhere?
I'm looking elsewhere this week. I'm going to go with another quarterback, a hot quarterback named Jordan Tamu. He's a St. Louis Battlehawks over the D.C. Defenders. I think it's dropping minus five in D.C., but I like the Battlehawks this week. Their defense, number one defense in all of the XFL. The Defenders have been struggling lately.
All right, so I was going to ask you, Battlehawks minus five. Do you like them that much, or do you think that little of the defenders?
I think that little of the defenders lately. The first 2 weeks, they won for me. They covered, but Cardale Jones, that whole football thing at Ohio State, he's not doing very good with that right now. So I have to hit it against him, and I got to go Battlehawks.
James Kelly, he's got them, the Battlehawks, minus five. Now, speaking of battle-tested, Battlehawks, our very own pigeon, the XR4TI's Battlehawk. Adam Hawk is going to run it back in the L.A. Marathon. He's looking to better his time from last year. Not just better it, James, but annihilate it. According to his tweet of a year ago, he ran it in 6 hours, 18 minutes, 57 seconds. This year, he's looking to break 5 hours. Now, he did say, quote, "Keep in mind, I'm kind of fat and very slow." Is this guy sandbagging us by saying that he's fat and slow, or is he in fact fat and slow? Are you taking the over or the under on Hawk 5 hours in the LA Marathon?
He's fat, he's slow, he's a stoner, he's all those things. I do give credit to Hawk, though. Running 26.2 miles is incredible, and everybody who's doing it is incredible. It means a lot to him. I respect that. Having said that, no way in hell he's running under 5 hours. You remember last year, Ike's classmates were passing him down the stretch of that race. I mean, there's no way this guy's going to improve his time for an hour and 18 minutes. The only bet on a Hawk I'd probably make, actually the safest bet of the week, is he's going to look like a damn idiot. I promise you that.
Can you get that action anywhere?
I don't know. I'm looking around for it.
What board is that? Is that on Bovada?
That's not on Bovada right now, but if somebody wants to bet me, I guarantee you come through with that.
I said, is he sandbagging us or is he fat and slow? And James Kelly responded, he's fat, he's slow, and he's a stoner. I don't know. Hawk's got a way of rising up. Hawk's got a way of not always or even often, but getting the last laugh. Do you have Hawk over or under? James Kelly's got the over all day
over,
long.
All day.
One bonus. How about this? What's his face? You know, homeboy that's aging out and everybody keeps trying to get. He tries to get everybody to look at him and talk about him. What's his face, man? You know what I'm talking about.
Oh.
TB24 yeah. Or TB43.
TB43, that's it, right there.
TB43.
Yep.
What's the market now saying about TB43? Is there any team that's moving in that space and moving up with a legitimate shot to get TB43?
The biggest movement from last week to this week are the Titans. They're moving up to actually plus 250 right now. They're the second choice. The Patriots are still the favorite at minus 175. I think they're going the Patriots. Therese made some good points about the Titans earlier and Jack Conklin. They might be able to address that in the draft, but the Titans are making the most movement as far as that, and it's actually a pretty good difference between the third choice. The Chargers are plus 650 as a third choice. Plus 650. And the Titans are minus 250 right now.
You got a lot of stuff rattling around that gigantic head of yours. I can see where that would happen. Let's run this thing down very quickly as we go to break. Lake Show, V-Bucks, you've got
Bucks plus one.
I'm going to take Lakers minus one. UFC 248, Adesanya and Romero. Israel at minus 320. Yoel at plus 250 as a big underdog. Who do you have?
Yoel Romero plus 250.
XFL, Battlehawks minus five versus the Defenders.
Battlehawks minus five. Take the points.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
St. Louis Battlehawks. You're already getting the treatment from Alvin DeLauro. LA Marathon, Hawk, 5 hours, over, under.
Over, without a doubt. No way he goes under five.
Do you think he breaks his time from last year?
I think he might break that, but I'm looking around 5:30, 5:40, somewhere around there.
End of the day, TB43. Where's he going to end up?
Take the Pats, minus 175. Last week was minus 125. Take it. He's going back to New England.
Patrick Queen is my guest. Patrick, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. You?
I'm awesome. It's great to have you on the show. Thank you. Before we talk about the combine and the draft, take me back to the national championship game. Now, you've played in big games throughout your entire career, but before that game, like, what types of things are running through you before you take the field? In other words, do you convince yourself that it's just another game, or did it feel different because, well, it was different?
I treat it as a normal game. You know, no game is bigger than the other. I always had that mindset growing up, and same thing when I got into college, every game is the same game. Sometimes you get a little nerves, but I guess that's normal in the sport that we play, and just going into that game, I was more calm than I've been in other games, so I just knew something special was about to happen.
Patrick Queen joining us. So when you spend your entire life working towards something like that, and then you get there and you're there to do just that thing, and you finally finish it off and you win it, you're a national championship, did it live up to the hype? Did it feel the way you thought it would feel?
Of course it did. Being that I won championships when I, championship when I was in high school, and the feeling, you know, I already knew the feeling of winning, and just being able to go on a bigger stage and win and bring that kind of trophy back to your home state, and just to go all through the things that I went through and just to get to that spot, that was big. And just the feeling still unreal that we won a championship, like, to this day, like, it still doesn't, it just feels like a dream because you can't imagine being on a level and winning something that large.
Nobody can ever take that from you. Patrick Queen joining us. There's also this great story from when you were growing up. Your father talks about how you were a really good baseball player at 8, and by the time you were 10, your parents would bring your birth certificate to games to prove that you were not older than the other kids. So what were you like as a baseball player?
Just a heavy hitter when I was growing up. Wasn't that good in the field until I got into like my 8th grade, 9th grade year. Just a lot of work that came with it. My dad got me in the backyard working on my batting all day, every day. Something I hated as a kid, just being not able to be with my friends all the time. But I don't regret anything they ever did just because they made me the player I am today. And just with the baseball thing, when I got into high school, I became like one of the best leadoff hitters I think this probably has had. And it just came from work ethic that my dad had me going through. And I wasn't really that big home run guy, but I always got on base, always had gap shots, and was able to steal. So I guess that's how I found my way into the leadoff spot.
Patrick Queen joining us. All right, so growing up in Louisiana, it would seem natural that you'd want to go to LSU, and that was the case. But then you went to a camp at Ole Miss, and you met Tom Allen, who's now the head coach at Indiana. Then you started thinking about going to Ole Miss. You even had an Ole Miss cake for your 16th birthday. How close were you to going there?
I was always close to going to Ole Miss. I just loved the way they had played growing up. Then I was always watching LSU, so those two teams were really my favorites growing up. And just when I went to the camp and got to see the facility and meet the coaches and stuff, you know, I just had a bigger take on what I wanted to do when I grew up. So I just knew those two teams were for sure going to be the two teams I would have finished with. And unfortunately, he left and we went to Indiana. He got offered me Indiana. Kind of wanted to follow his footsteps and go behind him, but I felt like it was best just to go to LSU just because that's my home state. They, I owed them a lot. Always growing up during recruiting, they always told me that I was going to get the offer. And, you know, I had that trust built up with them. So that's who I stuck with and took off from there.
We're talking to Patrick Queen. That makes sense. So you grow up and you see the combine, and you probably wonder about the combine. You finally get there. You know what's at stake. You're coming off a really strong showing there. What was that entire experience like for you, being at the combine?
It was a great experience as far as just getting to meet different coaches and stuff that you always see on TV. See how they actually work in real life, how they question people, how what's their take on football, like what's their perspective on certain defenses and how certain players play. And just to meet all the coaches was a great experience. The combine itself was a great experience. A lot of testing that we had to do, a lot of medicals and stuff, just to see the different stuff that other people before me went through. The actual combine itself was good. Unfortunately, I pulled my hamstring on my second run. It's getting better day by day. I feel like I'm making good progress with that. And that's really it.
I got it. So, like, if you and I were to go back, you've talked about the fact that when you were coming out of high school, folks were saying that you were too small to play linebacker in college. What did you think when you heard that? Did you use that as fuel? Did that motivate you?
Of course it motivated me, because it's just a crazy thing that people still judge sizes in this in today's game. And I knew I was already undersized. That's why making that transition was scared, but the biggest thing I wanted to do, because just to be able to prove people wrong and just to be able to prove to myself that I could be better, that's probably the biggest thing. And people always going, like, I get that now going into the NFL, like people saying I'm too small to play linebacker in the NFL, which I have no clue why, because the game is changing today. But all I see is the heart matters. Like, if they feel like I can't stop the run, then they just got to turn on the tape and take the tape, because that's obviously not a weak point in my game. And I could do everything else which a team needs, and that may be covering or blitzing, whatever it may be. I'm that three-down linebacker. to be able to stop and run and do all the other things that I need to be able to do. So when it comes to the size thing, I really don't pay attention to it. Yeah, it motivates me, but at the same time, I know my game, I know my heart, I know God. So I know, and then I'll be fine.
Dude, I know a good answer when I hear one, too. That's how you answer that question. Patrick Queen joining us. I love that. Listen, it was not easy, though, right? Like, when you got to LSU, initially you did not start. Once you got the opportunity, you dominated now, but it was not easy. In fact, there's a story about how you went to Ed Orgeron, and you said to him, what can I do to get better? What was his response, and what did you take away from that?
He just told me that I need to get better in the run game with using my hands. I wasn't big on hands. Being that coming out of high school, I played running back and then made a switch over to linebacker in college. My first year was tough for me. I didn't get to play that much because I had trouble learning the defense. And being that being a linebacker, you can't just know your position. You have to know everybody else's. So until I knew everybody else's position, I had to just learn the whole defense as a whole and wouldn't be able to touch the field. But coming with that, I just went up to Atlanta and asked them for help. Devin took me under, helped me. Michael Divinity took me under and helped me. Helped me learn to play. Ronnie Wee, all those guys helped me learn the stuff. So from that point on, I just took notes, and middle of sophomore year, caught on to it. Was able to just take it and roll with it. And unfortunately, Devin got suspended for the Alabama game, and I got to showcase my talents. And then I guess coaches really opened their eyes and gave me a chance the last five games to start. And then going into this year, I didn't start the first three games. Never took anything bad from it, never took too much away from it, never got down on myself, just made me work harder. And then I actually got my spot back the fourth game into the season and took off from there and just got better each game.
Talking to Patrick Queen for a few more moments, you know, you got the football side of this, and then you've got the intangibles. Like, for instance, you and safety Jacoby Stevens spent a lot of time at the facility working on run fits, getting into the gap. This is what he said about you, quote, "I've never met anybody who wants it more than he does, and he doesn't want it because he wants to play in the NFL and make a lot of money. He wants it because he wants to play football and he wants to represent his family," end quote. It's really high praise. Does that sound right to you? Is that where the drive and the fire comes from, to represent your family and play the game?
Yeah, of course. I can say the same for him. It's really the same both ways. We just want to be great. We just want to represent our family the right way. We just want to be everything that you see in today's NFL going the right way. That's why when we always had arguments about run fits and stuff, we would always get on the board and try to see each other's perspective on it, because just like, I might not always be right, he might not always be right, but we both work together. You know, we could both reach the goal that we want to reach, and we both can learn something from each other. So I could just say that with him, he pushed me every day to be better, and I try to push him every day to be better as well. Weight room-wise, film-wise, board-wise, whatever it may be for us to compete on, we competed on, and we worked together. And I can say the same for him. Like, with everything that he said about me goes the same for him. And I'm just thankful that I was able to be a part of his life and be a teammate of his and a friend of his.
It's great. A couple of things before you go. I had Therese Paylor from Yahoo Sports on the show earlier. I mentioned to him that I was going to talk to you, and he was fired up, and he talked about how good you are and the fact that two of you spoke at the Combine. One of the things, and this goes back to what you and I just discussed about size, one of the things that he and I talked about was the fact that NFL teams are looking for linebackers that can run, because the game is changing, and you've got the speed they're looking for. So who are the guys playing in the NFL right now that maybe you model your game after?
A lot of guys like Devin White, Deion Jones, Quan Alexander, those LSU guys, Roquan Smith as well, because they all got speed. They always got aggression, physical, and playmaking ability. It's just every one of them has something different about them, and I try to take each little piece of that and try to inform it into my game. And all those guys are great, going to be great linebackers, probably Hall of Fame linebackers as well. So, of course, I watch them and try to take notes from them and try to be the best that I can be out of modeling them.
Patrick, I mentioned you got a big signing event tonight. It's from 7 to 9 p.m. How much are you looking forward to that, and how much does the support of the Tiger fans mean to you?
It means the world to me. Just to be able to, like I said, go to this great institution and just be able to bring back that big old trophy back to Louisiana. Like you said, 7 to 9 at Tiger Bay Sports Collectibles, located on South Sherwood Forest Boulevard in Baton Rouge. Can't wait to see all the fans. Stuff like this I enjoy, just be able to meet the fans and get the whole conversation with them and just sign stuff for them.
Alvin, are you ready to work your voodoo that you do?
That voodoo that you do so well.
And now What's going on? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Hope you had a great weekend. Nice to have you here. All right, starting with the NBA. If the league is trying to make me want a Pelicans-Lakers first-round series, mission accomplished. Well done. The Pelicans kept coming at the end, and then LeBron stuck this in Zion's eye.
LeBron's got it on the right wing, one-on-one against Zion. Three-pointer by LeBron. It's good!
You can compete like hell during the game and still hug it out after the game.
Kiss my ass.
It's not a sign of being soft. It's a sign of respect. Don't confuse that kindness with weakness.
With a smile, too.
Oh!
Quick throw, tip, and it's intercepted again!
No!
Landry!
Dietrich Nichols has it!
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Can't imagine don't the f*** out of here.
I got no idea who Charles James II is, but I do know he's my favorite XFLer of all time.
Well, I don't know why he's strolling if the guy's all over.
Jason Lockenforad.
Saul refused. In D.C., I think I'm going to see Cheap Trick.
Cheap Trick is pretty intriguing. I like
that.
I've
seen him many times, and those guys are legit.
Oh, now he's trying to clown. See, Trevor not having it.
Keep doing you, both of you. Except Trey, maybe you pass the next time. You have a shot to nutmeg Trev. If not, you're going to be wearing it again.
Trevor not playing it.
Jake came to me at one point and said, hey, Dad, I think I'd like to intern for you. I said, yeah, I think that's not going to happen. Why not? Because you don't know anything about sports. He is Matt Norlander.
For anyone who is super, super into March, do check out that Ion College Basketball Podcast. Listen, it's not quite on the Alvin DeLauro level, but Jim, I swear to you, it's really, really close.
Dude.
You know, sometimes when you go to these online gambling sites, that was such a strong I almost threw out my shoulder.
Mijo, rub some Vicks on it.
Jordan Wara is my guest. What was life like in Buffalo growing up, and how much pride do you take in being from Buffalo?
Life in Buffalo, you know, was great. You know, I take a lot of pride being from Buffalo.
So in conclusion, as it relates to the NBA offering advice on steps to deal with coronavirus, here is my advice to you. Wash your damn hands. 9 people die in a tragic accident. You're reaching for your phone, and then you're looking to share the photographs. That is filthy. That is terrible. That is just reprehensible.
We have the HIPAA law, and any violation of that is a fireable offense.
Somebody should have grabbed that idiot's phone and taken it away.
Al Harrington.
Well, how you been, man? It's been a long time.
Man, it's been a long time, Al. How you doing?
I'm good, brother. Just, you know, grinding.
So what were you like as a kid?
Oh, man, I was fat and clumsy, man.
Dragic looking for the foul. Well, he got George Hill below the slow-mo replay. How could anybody, unless somebody took a sledgehammer to your junk, smashed him, flat out wrecked him, damn near killed him? Who cares what door this guy goes through? You should just be happy that he's showing up at all for your crummy team. Last season, he led St. Louis to their first Stanley Cup ever. Craig Berube.
Our players have done a fantastic job this year of very motivated.
Stop telling people you can't lose weight because you have a slow metabolism. He thinks...
Jason, I'm still not laughing. You know why that is? You're still not funny. You're the jungle version of Fat Gym Guy. You're like Fat Jungle Guy. Mick Cronin. You went to see my man David August.
They were awesome. You make a short Irishman look sharp on the sideline. You're really good at what you do.
Come on.
I figured this would be as good a time as any to RSVP for the Buffalo tour stop, Brad. I will be there.
I owned it after acting like a buffoon for a long time.
That's such a good word.
Buffoon.
Almost as good as boob. Booby. Booby. I walked back into the studio looking at my phone, did not see the camera, and smashed
right in my face.
Holy. The old man just ran into one of the cameras.
Double vision?
No.
Shiny star?
No.
Seeing a light or anything like that?
No, nothing like that.
Go out and rip yourself up a little bit today?
My man.
Guess what, Jim? You probably definitely had a concussion. You got to fill out an incident report, give it to your HR people or whatever.
Okay, let me do this. Arch, thank you very much. Wet blanket. He is Chris Haynes.
Jim, so you're trying to tell me if I got hit with a 2x4 and I was waiting on it, that's not disconcerting as well?
Good point.
What is, do a 180?
Nope.
Paul, my man, use your head. What person in the history of the world has ever been nicknamed Duo 180?
Duo 180?
Trust the process. Duo 180.
Trust the
Duo 180? Jimmy Dykes. What was it like coaching Rex at UK?
He was getting offers that were off the charts that an 18-year-old boy didn't need to be getting passed along his way.
I'm looking elsewhere this week. I'm going to go with another quarterback, Jordan Tamu. He's a St. Louis Battlehawks.
Are you taking the over or the under on Hawk 5 hours in the LA Marathon?
He's fat. He's slow. He's a stoner. He's all those things. No way in hell he's running under 5 hours.
Will you get a flight deck tattoo if you do not finish under 5 hours?
I'll do it.
Patrick Queen joining us.
People saying I'm too small to play linebacker in the NFL, which I have no clue why. I know my game. I know my heart. I know God. So I know in the end I'll be fine.
The clone with the Surf concert and the kidney donation. I was listening to that at the gym.
We feel your pain, Mr. Hill.
No, you don't.
Am I on?
What up, Doc?
Pompous a-hole.
Oh, my God.
I look forward to seeing you sometime soon.
Come jump on the podcast whenever you need me.
Yo, Huey's, what's up?
That Bluff City Burger is the best.
I'll keep you posted.
The Crank!
And smashed right in.
Head slam.
Good night now!
So good, Alvy.
Good night